email todaysor@rte.ie.
One of the most viewed videos on social media after the Paris attacks was of a father explaining to his young son that he didn't need to be afraid of the terrorists. Talking to children about the terror attacks and other dramatic news can be a challenge, and I'm joined now on phone to discuss this by Pamela Druckerman, author and contributing op-ed writer with the New York Times, and in studio by psychologist Colman Nochter. Thank you both for joining us on the programme. Pamela, you were actually at a dinner party in Paris when all these bombs and the shootings started happening. You have children, so how did you deal with the whole situation?
Well, the first thing I discovered is that my husband was in the Stade de France as a journalist. That's where the bombs first went off. So my first priority was to get in touch with him, which I did. He was okay. He was tweeting. But then I called my babysitter and made sure my kids were okay, and they were, you know, the kids in Paris were asleep for the most part when this happened.
And what about then working through the weekend? I gather you didn't stay, you didn't go home that evening. You stayed where you were at the dinner party.
My dinner party became a slumber party because it wasn't safe to go out on the streets of Paris because the attacks were still going on very close to my house. So I didn't want to risk going out on the street because I knew my kids were okay at home.
How old are they, and how did you talk to them, and how did you take them through the weekend?
Well, their babysitter was there when they woke up, so I didn't get to initially tell them what happened. But basically, we told them in very plain terms that there had been an attack, that there were some bad guys, but that the bad guys were being rounded up. And, I mean, these are kids who, about 10 months earlier had been through the Charlie Hebdo attacks, which were also in my neighborhood. So, I mean, their first response was, oh, you mean like Charlie Hebdo? So they had immediately had a point of reference. They didn't really want to go through the whole emotional drama of it again. But, of course, eventually they did have more questions, and I think we tried to do what sort of all the French psychologists are advising, which is you give a simple explanation of what happened, and you try to be calm when you give that explanation, and then you just wait for the kids' questions, and you respond to all their questions. And, it's impossible, especially living where we do in Paris, but I think anyone, in the world with a television set or a radio feels this way right now. You can't pretend that it's not happening. You can't shut kids out.
Pamela, what ages are your children?
They're 7, 7, and 9.
Okay, so they're at an age where they're starting to ask some very pertinent questions, though I suppose pertinent questions are asked from a very early age. Stay with us if you can. Colman Nochter, what is your view about the advisability or otherwise of keeping your children or trying to keep children away from television when these kind of stories are running?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real dilemma because you want to protect the innocence of childhood and you don't want to introduce things that necessarily that will overwhelm them or burden them, I suppose. But with the ubiquity of media today, it's impossible to almost shield them from it. And in my mind, it's best that they have a kind of a sensible adult voice that mediates that reality rather than getting it from their peers in the schoolyard or from Google. And so I think it's a difficult conversation to have, but I think it's one that parents might need to have in order for the... Because children, they tend to go into the dramatic and they will ask the really pertinent questions that almost we're afraid to ask, like, will this happen to me? Will it happen again? And you really need to not allow a child to become overwhelmed where they're ruminating over it or feeling that there's an undue danger imminent.
So, Colman, how would you explain something like those atrocities to a child, say, under 10?
Yeah, I mean, again, you're looking at the kind of the robustness of the child first. There are certain children who have a tendency towards anxiety, and I would see people in the clinic where children would ruminate over news stories. So you might give them a less is more approach in terms of that. But it's like Pamela's saying, it's using really plain language. But I would really try and, I would avoid imagery. Don't use, because it's very hard for children to unsee something that they see. And I would really ham up the hope and the solidarity that came with the response to the attacks, and that these men are caught now, and that there's far more hope and solidarity and good people in the world than the handful of bad, so that the child doesn't feel that the bad guy in the corner is a terrorist as well.
Pamela?
I completely agree that kids shouldn't see violent images at all. I mean, we did not turn on the TV at all. I kept newspapers with violent images out of the way because apparently that's much more damaging to children, and it's harder for them to forget about. But in terms of, you know, my kids went to the school. We controlled the story that we told them on Saturday or Sunday. But on Monday they went to school, and some kids there had seen images and told them grisly stories about what happened inside the theater where the people were held hostage. And so my kids came back much more panicked on the Monday than they had been over the weekend, and I had to once again sort of talk them through it. But you're right, Coleman, that there are some questions that kids ask, like, will this happen again? Where, you know, you can't tell them no, it'll never happen again, because you don't know. All you can say is, we're all with the government, the police, many countries are working together to make sure that this doesn't happen again, and you're safe in your house, and we're doing everything we can.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of trying to manage the hysteria around it as well. And you know, 8 to 10 year olds can be a dramatic bunch. But I think from the point of view of, it is about trying to have the open avenue for the questions, because a different question may arise on Monday after something soaks in. But I think what's important to know is, as adults, we kind of develop defense mechanisms that we can dip in and out of it. So, like, you might be watching something and go, actually, I need to turn that off now, it's getting too upsetting for me. Children don't have that well-adjusted ability to kind of dip in and out of connectedness with emotionality. So it affects their dreams, their sleep patterns, appetite, and they can really become quite distressed by it. So you really have to be mindful of what type of child you're talking to, and trying to almost drip feed them at a way in which they can manage.
And Pamela, I gather that you have been drawing a lot, and perhaps as other people have as well, on the advice given in an earlier time by France's equivalent of Dr. Spock.
Yes, France didn't have Dr. Spock, but they had a woman called Françoise Dolto, who had her own radio show on French radio every day for 10 minutes a day. And her point was that you have to be honest with kids. You don't have to tell them the whole truth, but you have to. The worst thing for a child is to feel that something terrible is happening, but to have no one explain it to them. They don't need to be happy all the time, but they need to understand the world that they're in and their immediate surroundings. So be honest. And, you know, my daughter's biggest question was, you know, she said, Mommy, did this happen to you when you were a child? Did you experience terrorist attacks? She wanted to know, is it normal to grow up with 2 terrorist attacks within a year? And I had to say, you know, the worst thing that ever happened to me was our house was robbed when nobody was home. That was it.
But
it's a new world.
What do you say, though, if they start asking questions about what they see or hear about what's going on in Brussels and schools being shut and the transport system and so forth, and then they say, look, you know, it's happened twice this year, Charlie Hebdo, you referred to earlier, now this, will it happen again? What's the answer to that when asked by a child?
You say, again, that we're working very hard, that the police are working hard, that the government's working hard, that the intelligence agencies are working hard to make sure this doesn't happen again, that we're doing our very best. But you don't make an impossible promise.
Given, though, what happened when they went to school on Monday and found out far more than you had told them, in hindsight, do you think maybe you should perhaps have let them watch a little bit of the television?
No, I think those other parents shouldn't have let their kids watch TV. I mean, you have to accompany your children through what they discover and what they see and what they hear. You can't keep them in a box or at home all the time. You know, you have to be there. You know, as the man who runs the French children's newspaper in Paris told me, kids don't live on Mars. They live in the same world we do. And the job of parents is to be with them in that world and help explain it to them and reassure them and make them feel safe as they can within it.
How do you explain, though, Coleman, why the bad men did what they did?
With great difficulty, because I think as adults we struggle to understand why the bad men did what they did. I think in terms of, and I'm borrowing from what Pamela said, I mean, I think there's an idea that you can say to somebody, some people are willing to die for an idea, and they are forceful about their beliefs and their opinions, and they don't allow other people to have different opinions. But you follow that with, everyone must tolerate that different opinions are okay, and trying to use it as a kind of a life lesson. But I think getting back to the idea that you tell them it's never going to happen again, that might make them feel really reassured in the moment, but then if it does happen again, your reassurance loses all its merit and weight if you're trying to talk them down after another attack.
And in your case, Pamela, how would you have explained why those people did what they did?
I basically explained what I know as an adult in very simple terms. And then, as Coleman suggests, I sort of defined my own values in opposition to that and said, those are bad people, we don't agree with them, and here's what we do believe. You know, and the kids had so many questions after the attacks, like, were there any children killed, and how did the terrorists choose their targets, and why don't they like rock and roll music, and why would somebody, how can a sweet baby grow up to be an evil terrorist? How does that happen? And some questions like that, we don't have answers. I mean, that is what the whole sort of intelligence establishment right now is trying to figure out. So we say that. There are limits to what we know, but we're trying to find out more, and we're trying to prevent this from ever happening again.
We shall leave it there. Thank you both for joining us. Pamela Druckerman, op-ed contributor to the New York Times, and also Coleman Nocter, child psychotherapist. Thank you both. We'll be hearing the news from Brian Jennings after this break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.